Hey everybody, welcome back to Negro Please Radio. I'm your host Chris Allen. How's everybody doing? Glad to be here this beautiful Friday morning. Oh my God. Oof. As usual, off the top, I want to take the time out to thank each and every last one of you guys for tuning in, downloading, streaming. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Continue to tell your friends and family, co-workers, enemies, periodontists, chiropodists. I don't even know what a chiropodist is. They said it on Seinfeld. It's a funny word. So tell that person. Yeah. Thank you. Second episode of the week. I'll jump right in. I feel like I got a lot of different things to get mad about today. So, I'll jump right into my milestone. For those who don't know, I have a six-year-old son. His name is Miles, and I like to just document little things that he goes through or what he's into at the moment. And one, tomorrow he starts soccer, so that should be pretty cool. He's been wanting to play. Got the cleats and all that kind of stuff. He tried those on yesterday. He was super excited. Watching him run around the backyard and knows. So he can't wait. And his new thing now is, well, he's into Pokemon cards. He doesn't know how to play Pokemon. He just likes to say, hey, this is a GX. This is an EX. It does this damage. I don't really know what the kids do with them at his school other than, like, trade them and cry about it. But now his thing is he likes to basically design his own. So he'll trace out the outline of a Pokemon card and basically draw his own characters and you know, give them infinite damage and all this kind of stuff. And they're very colorful and very creative. And yeah, we encourage him to do that. It's pretty cool. That's his latest hobby now is he wants to be a Pokemon card creator. And yeah, I just like to see him engage in something creative, and he seems to enjoy it. So we are encouraging it, not discouraging it, encouraging it. Man, so that's the milestone. So if you know anyone into who wants any custom-made Pokemon cards by a six-year-old, let me know. I know a guy who does them. I don't know what made me think of this. This is so left field. I think I might have seen a video, but like, you, and to be honest, I don't think I've ever met a white dude like this, but you hear like black dudes like, man, I can't eat no banana if it's too big. I gotta break the banana in half. I gotta break it into pieces. I ain't eating no banana in public. It's just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You think you're sitting in public eating a banana and people think that you're sucking a dick. Even if you by yourself, you feel like it's gay or you're sucking a dick when you eat a banana. Your problem is you're literally just thinking about sucking dick and probably just needs to come to terms with that shit. I've never just had a banana and was just like, man, this is too much like a dick. I can't do it. It's just, you must have dick on the brain. That's your problem. I really think if you're quote unquote that straight, where you can't even, where you feel like a banana is challenging your sexuality, I really think that you just wish that banana, you could just peel that skin back and you just see that a nice veiny mushroom head dick. I think that's what you want to be inside of that fucking banana. I think that's what you really, really want. No one cares at all. And I get it. Maybe it just stems from us like over sexualizing women. Like if you see a woman eating a banana, you're like, oh my God, that's hot. I don't know. Or are you just worried about gay dudes watching you eat a banana? I don't know. I've never looked at a dude. I have no idea. I don't know, man. I just think you're dealing with some shit. That's just, I ain't eating no goddamn banana. That's just, all right. To each his own. That's fine. And I get mad at the left for pushing their sexual shit on people, and so it's just feel how you want, but it's just, to me, that's just weird that a banana triggers. Anyway, speaking of trigger, it's funny to see someone like these Kim Kardashian or just the Kardashian fans in general turning on them a little bit. I saw something, an article a couple of days ago, and some actress got pissed off, and now she is, I can't say it's picking up steam, and I understand it's just the internet, but it's funny to see like their fans slowly turning on them. And I don't have anything against the Kardashians. It's just funny how like people trash the Kardashians, especially a lot of guys call them whores and this all kind of crazy stuff, you know, just sluts. And like these women defend them like, hey, she's a woman. She's secure in her sexuality. Stop slut shaming. She's beautiful. She's this, she's that. And I feel the same way. They should be able to do what they want to do. But now these same women that came to their defense, they're turning on the Kardashians because now they're saying, oh, they're body shaming their fans because they post pictures of them looking sexy and, you know, and fit, and they got small waists and their body shaming us. They're posing with these weight loss supplements and these drink supplements, and they need to stop it. They need to admit that they're not really working out and they have all this body augmentation surgery. It's just like, that's hilarious. 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 Now you're mad at them for being in too good a shape. They're making you feel bad because they have a better looking body than you do. Does it matter if they pay for augmentation? I mean, which is it, ladies? I'm waiting. Nothing? I guess not. That is just so funny to me. So funny to me. It's all about body positivity for everybody, but if someone is in too good a shape and they want to show it off, hey, you got to stop that. You're making me feel bad. It's like, look, you might feel bad, but that's all on you, okay? You are doing that to yourself. Male or female, you're doing it to yourself. And the thing is, it's very simple to not feel like shit. Just don't fucking follow them on Instagram, on any social media at all. It's really that simple. Don't look at it. And then just be secure in your body. Now, if you want the body, fucking work out. It's really that simple, man. It's just insane to me that so many people now, it's just, it's like people, they don't want to improve themselves at all. And I get that it's hard as a person who struggled with their weight. It's not fucking easy to do. But people want to hear that they're doing, that they fucking look phenomenal. And the thing is, everybody ain't fucking hot, man. Everybody is not a goddamn 10. You might be a 10 to somebody, but you're not a fucking Hollywood 10. Or in the modeling world, a 10. Everybody's not. It is what it is. Like this whole thing, like where like people attack models like, oh, these aren't real women. Real women have this. It's like, why are you trashing? That's still another woman. You're trashing another woman because they don't have the shape that you have, or you don't have the shape that they have. Why are you doing that? You're tearing down another woman. It's like, yeah, we're all different. Some people are into that. Some people aren't. And there are some people that are just hot to everybody. And then there's some people that they're more of a, they have more of a niche look. And that's fine. In the end, there's no hot 90-year-old women or men. We all end up fucking either looking like Newt Gingrich or Morgan Freeman when it's all said and done. Your looks fade. Everybody's looks fade. It's like, yeah, it must be nice to be a good-looking person, a hot person, to have a fucking six-pack. But everybody ain't gonna fucking have it, man. And if it really hurts you that much to see it and it makes you feel bad, either don't fucking look at it or change something. Fucking mad at them for. That's insane to me, man. Don't you call her a whore. Don't do this to her. You don't slut shame. She's beautiful. She can do what she wants. Post a couple pictures you don't like. You're body shaming me. No one's making you look at her fucking Instagram. Don't look at it. Jesus Christ. Am I upset this morning? Probably. I like this version of me. It's fun. I felt like there was something else. Yeah, when I saw that, dude, I lost it, man. I fucking lost it. So I think I mentioned it on the podcast a couple of weeks ago that I was doing the Just for Laughs audition, and I did it two weeks ago, and that was a fun experience. And for people who don't know, and I don't know how many people listen to my fucking podcast or who listens to it, but Just for Laughs is the biggest comedy festival in the world. From what people say, it's not like it used to be, but that's what everyone says about everything. But apparently, you know, back in the day, you could go there as an unknown comic and leave with a TV show and millions of dollars and development deals and all this kind of stuff. And but it doesn't seem to fast track your career as much as it used to, but it's still, you know, the most popular and coveted comedy festival in the world. And so they go around the country to different, you know, big cities, and they do these auditions. This guy Jeff Singer kind of runs everything when it comes to these showcases. And so he came to DC. We were all at the Improv. They did four shows, three or four shows. I want to say four. I don't know. Fucking three or four. And so there are just over 30 comics that auditioned. And it was fun, man. I was on the show with a couple of friends. My buddy Winston was on the late show. I was on the early show on a Saturday. And it was just a lot of fun to have that experience with a bunch of DC guys and friends that you do a lot of shows with over the last couple of years. And it went well. Everyone had good sets, and it was fun. I got some good feedback from Jeff Singer afterwards, but it's such a long shot. It's just one of those things where, like, you do it and you want to do well. My whole goal was to not bomb. I wanted to, because when you audition, it's not like you know right then and there. They take notes. They don't really say anything. But my goal was to leave not feeling like I didn't get it. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to leave there knowing, like, I fucked that up. There's no way. So I had a good set. And it's just one of those things where you do it and you just got to forget about it. You know, you can't be checking your email every day and looking at the website and you know, asking all these questions. And you just do it. Feel good about it and just kind of just accept it is what it is. And honestly, the likelihood of getting it for any of us is very, very low. I mean, I think they auditioned probably about 1,000 comics all over the country, and they pick like 20 to 25 people at the most. And it's very hard and exclusive to get into. It will be great, but I don't know, but I had a great time. And also did the Comedy Central Up Next audition the Wednesday before that. And Comedy Central has a festival called Clusterfest that they put on every year in San Francisco. And it's kind of the same process where they kind of go around, like a PA comes, they record the sets. I don't know how much note-taking she was doing, but I guess they get all these tapes and watch them and make a decision on who they want to have. So, and that went really well. So, you know, both sets went well. It's in the bag. And all I can do is just move on. I mean, I don't even want to say sit and wait. You know, I just got to move on and maybe one day I just happen to check my emails. It's like, hey, we would like you to come do this thing. You know, so that's how that went. I appreciate all the likes and the text messages and the words of encouragement. So it went well. I had a lot of fun. And it's just like when they had that, I can't remember the name of the festival, but it was like, I think it was like Capital City or Capital City Fest, or they had some comedy festival at the Kennedy Center last year. And I was very fortunate to be a part of that. And it was like one of those moments where we do all these like little bar shows, you know, they go well, but there's so many nights where it's just like no one's doing well. The audience is tired. They don't want to be there. No one. It's just it's a fucking fight, you know. You just want to just quit comedy and just go in a hole and die sometimes. And it's just nice to see some daylight, so to speak, you know, and do a great showcase like that with those same people. So, yeah, it was great. And I appreciate Allison Jaffe and Antoine over at the DC Improv, and Sean Joyce at Underground Comedy for recommending me and letting me, you know, have that opportunity. And it was fun. And we'll see what happens. But, yeah. Great experience. Either way, I'm satisfied with what I did on those shows. I didn't leave like, ah, man, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. You know, I was prepared, and it felt good. And I can't feel bad about the outcome. You know what I mean? So, shout out to everybody on that show. It was fun, man. It was tense. You can tell people were kind of on edge. People were a little bit more ball busty. People were nervous. And I can't lie, that was the most nervous I've been for any set, and especially a 5-minute set, in years. And that's funny too, because I remember first starting out, people, you know, like hanging out with a more seasoned comic and go, hey, you got 5 minutes on this show. And they go, damn, 5 minutes. I can't even really get into anything in 5 minutes. And, yeah, just happened to do a 5-minute set on something like that. You go, man, that's not enough time. I got, you know, a lot of jokes I would like to get in there. And I just remember being at the point in my career years ago, like, man, 5 minutes is still kind of a long time. But don't get me wrong. You can still die a horrible death in 5 minutes. But when it's something that important, you really want to give them a little bit more time and get out as many of your best jokes as possible. And when you cut it down to five, you're like, ah, I want to do this, but if I don't do this, then I can't do that one. I could do this one, but this won't match up. Will it be cohesive? It's just you really get in your head and you start thinking about, is this set, is there any continuity in it? It seems like I'm jumping around too much. Is, you know, I'm doing a joke about bees over here, then I'm talking about the trans movement. There's no through line. It's just like you start really getting in your own head, and you start taking advice from other people who may have auditioned, people who are in the biz, quote unquote, and you know they have their whole thing. Like you want to show them who you are. You got people like telling you, You want to let them, you want to show them that you have ideas for a TV show. You want to be, you know, pro this. Do a lot of pro gay jokes. Do a lot of pro trans. Do this. Show them that you're woke. Show them that you're this. It's just so many different opinions from people are thrown at you. You don't, sometimes you don't even know what to do. You know, it's just like, you just got to be true to yourself. Don't try to do jokes that you think they want to hear, like, oh, you want, you know, these anti-Trump jokes, or like again, the pro-gay, the pro-trans jokes. It's like, maybe, it's like, that's cool, but just do what you want to do. Don't do what you think they want to hear. Talk about yourself. Just try to be unique. And, yeah. That was the best advice I got. Do your best jokes. Do your best jokes. And I felt like I did. And I had fun. So there's that experience. And I'm headlining tonight, Charlottesville, the Southern, 8 o'clock. I got a bunch of problematic straight white dudes on the show. And I'm excited. I think this may be my last show headlining in Charlottesville. I guess real quick, yeah, we went down to Atlanta. We had a good time. I stayed with my aunt. I saw my cousins, and we had a good time. They showed us around a little bit, and man, that's a pretty big city. This episode would be just a tad longer. Let me just say this. I would be remiss if I didn't, and I think that's the right word. I don't get to see my Aunt Kay and Uncle Roosevelt very often, but and I feel weird as a younger person saying that I'm proud of them, like I'm somehow like looking down on them, but I don't mean it like that any way. But I mean, but here's a guy, my uncle, grew up Jim Crow South, joined the military as a very young man, you know, did time on active duty, joined the reserves, came back, gets a good job, gets married. I mean, he grew up not having much of anything, you know, but he did grow up with a good work ethic. He's a great husband, great father, great uncle. And, I mean, they have a beautiful home. It's like 5 bedrooms. And, I mean, just, when you think about it, there's a certain age group of black people that really had shit stacked up against them back in the day. I mean, it's like we say we got it bad now. It's just like there were laws in place for them to fail. And to see that man go from, well, to hear, because I didn't see it, but for him to go from this poor black kid in the South, Jim Crow, single mom, like 5 or 6 kids. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. But to have the foresight and the guidance to get himself out of his situation, and to look at him now, I mean, he's retired. I mean, you could just the way my uncle acts, man, you know, money is not an issue. Same with my aunt. They worked their ass off their entire lives. They grew up, you know, poor down there. They had a small little modest house, and just they could have easily just given up and go, you know, I'm just gonna do this. I'm not gonna, you know, I ain't gonna make no waves. I'm just trying to just make it. But they know they fought and they worked hard, and they bought a trailer years ago, and it was like a nice double wide. You know, and over the years, my uncle did all the stuff to it, worked hard. Man, that guy had so many hunt dogs and guns and motorcycles, boats. I mean, because he worked hard, he did his money right. And now look at them. They live in Atlanta in a beautiful home. And I was thinking, like, there's no way in the world if he went back and told his 8-year-old self how he would be living now. I mean, because we show up, they got food, they're frying chicken. They had stuff for miles. They had snacks that I liked, snacks that she liked. I mean, huge bedrooms. Eat what you want. Stay as long as you want. Don't have to pay for nothing. But for that, it's just, there's so many black people in that fit that description, man. And if you know anybody like that, you should really just tell them that you're proud of them. I mean, because a lot of them, they came from nothing, man. I mean, that's a generation where, like, some of them still had dirt floors, and they became doctors. They had big houses. Their kids went to college. You know what I mean? And for that, I mean, his house, his home is beautiful, man. They got so much, and they came from nothing. And it's just, it's good to see. I should have put this in the front of the podcast. This deserves the front. But I love them so much, and man, there's so much great advice, the funny stories, man. Yeah. At almost 40 years old, man, you can't underestimate the wisdom and guidance you can still get from your uncles, man. And he's so funny. He's so country. He left me a voicemail. You should see how the iPhone translated it. It is hilarious. Oh my God. I need to post that. Just the transcript. Oh man. Hilarious. But all right, there's a show. That's a show. Everybody have a great weekend. I'm out. Peace. Oh yeah, congrats to UVA. They won championship. I knew it.